KBOO, Portland, Oregon.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Welcome to Labor Radio. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilliland.
Thank you so much for joining us. Just quickly before we start the show, we'd like to give a special thanks and shout out to the Labor Radio Podcast Network for hosting podcasted versions of our show each month. Be sure to check that out at laborradionetwork.org. And you can also hear old versions of this show as well as many other labor-related podcasts and radio shows on there. So go to laborradionetwork.org. And so today, for the meat of our show, we'd like to touch on a topic that we discussed pretty intensely a couple months ago, back in April, and that is the Amazon union drive that took place in Bessemer, Alabama. Now, as if you're paying attention to that, or if you listen to this show, you'll know that that was unfortunately defeated. The workers of that facility voted it down. But there were a number of things that were questionable about how that vote was carried out, and some of the intimidation tactics that Amazon used to dissuade workers from voting for the union. And at the time, we on this show discussed the fact that that was, although it was ultimately unsuccessful, it was in fact an opening salvo in a long battle to unionize Amazon workers and to change the culture of low wage work that exists in this country. And, you know, we predicted that there would be much more to come on that front. And, you know, it appears that we were correct about that, because after all the votes were tallied in April and the union was ultimately defeated, the Retail, Wholesale, and Department Store Workers Union, or the RWDSU, filed nearly 24 formal objections with the National Labor Relations Board, or the NLRB. Those objections allege that Amazon's conduct in the lead up to and during the election, quote, created an atmosphere of confusion, coercion, and or fear of reprisals, which they believed interfered with their employees' freedom of choice within the election process. And those objections called for the NLRB to set the election results aside and to call for a new election. So, you know, that's a huge claim or accusation against the company. But after, you know, multi-weeks-long hearing on the vote by the NLRB, the RWDSU, the union, announced in a press release last week that the Atlanta NLRB official who was overseeing that hearing has recommended the results of that election in Alabama be scrapped and that a new election be held due to Amazon's illegal misconduct and violation of the workers' labor rights. So that's a huge victory. The officials specifically found that Amazon interfered with the conditions necessary to conduct a fair election. So, you know, some of the things, we'll go into more specifics about what it is that Amazon did, but the union president, Stuart Applebaum, in that release said that throughout the NLRB hearing, we heard compelling evidence how Amazon tried to illegally interfere with with and intimidate workers as they sought to exercise their right to form a union. Amazon's behavior throughout the election process was despicable, and Amazon cheated, they got caught, and they are now being held accountable. So, you know, yeah, again, we will go into the specifics of what it is, but this, you know, the results of the election were pretty overwhelming in favor of the company and against the union, but there is a lot to be said, and we will go into that, of what it is that may have dissuaded workers from voting and, or, you know, voting in favor of the union, or what may have intimidated them into just not voting at all.
Yeah, and it's all pretty common tactics. And I think, too, you know, the types of agencies and organizations that big companies like Amazon hire,
yeah,
kind of they wield the baton pretty strongly.
Yeah.
And also, they, like I mentioned, they use the same types of tactics kind of again and again because they've been proven.
Yeah.
So these things are known. You know, and a lot of the things that, you know, we've been talking about, like things like the PRO Act.
Yes.
Right? Like, not only is it about, you know, kind of making sure that people have the ability to vote and feel safe, but it's stopping some of these kind of really common, like, foundational union busting activities that have been in and around, you know, stopping unions for, or stopping workers from unionizing for decades.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you know, it's exactly like you just said. It's about stopping workers. You know, the PRO Act and things like that are about stopping employers from just using blatant union busting tactics. Yeah. And also, part of it is by increasing the enforcement mechanisms available to mm-hmm. the NLRB to push back against employers to do that. Which, you know, although the PRO Act has not been passed, we are seeing with the change from the Trump administration to the Biden administration. The Labor Department, and specifically the new officials who are on these the NLR the yeah. boards, the regional boards, are absolutely seeming, at least in this case, to be, you know, leaning more towards workers, or at least like evening the playing field.
Yeah, well, I would describe it that way, right? Where they're basically trying to say, hey, look, these things have been tilted for a long time, and you know there are certain activities that you can take that do in fact show over time make workers feel really unsafe about unionizing, especially in an environment, an economic environment where most of people's savings have been depleted. Exactly. And they're not in a position to really take risky gambits, even though in the long run it might benefit them and their coworkers. A lot of people just aren't in a position to make that call.
Of course, yeah. And like, you know, undertaking a union drive is expensive, and it requires time given of the workers and of the organizers, and you know, threats of losing your job and losing your financial security and things like that.
Yeah.
So like, there are a lot of things that even without the company doing anything to push back, it's already an intimidating process for workers to undertake. And so it is, you know, the playing field is already tilted towards not having a union be formed, even if the employers do nothing. And so by employing intimidation tactics, as we will discuss how Amazon did, that of course just further tips the scales towards not having a union. And so, you know, the NLRB standing up for this here and at least recommending that, or suggesting that this may have been unfair, is just trying to slightly rebalance the scales a bit there. And so, yeah, as we mentioned, Amazon pulled out all the stops to beat this vote, and they waged a multi-front battle both online and offline to attack the union. Some of the major things that they did were they posted vote no signage throughout all the bathrooms and in the bathroom stalls. So like, they're pretty unavoidable when you're, you know, despite the fact that there's been a lot of stories about Amazon workers not having time to use the restrooms, the ones who were able to make it to the restroom during their shifts were going to be confronted with all of this, you know, propaganda, this anti-union propaganda. They also bombarded workers with mass texts warning them not to vote yes, and they oftentimes were texting workers up to 5 times per day, which, you know, no one likes to get bombarded with texts from their boss, from their employers, mm-hmm. at all, but 5 times a day, I mean, that's intimidation right there. They also required workers to attend captive audience meetings, which are specifically banned by the NLRB, with instructors who attempted to scare workers about the dangers of joining unions. All right, excuse me, it's not, they are not banned by the NLRB, but they would be banned if the PRO Act were to be passed, sorry. Mm-hmm. And so in those meetings, they presented the workers with false information, false claims that unionization would decrease their wages. And a number of workers who ended up testifying in front of the NLRB during the hearings testified that they were warned by company officials that they could lose money and opportunities for raises if they were to vote for the union. Another example of intimidation on the part of the company was that they were able to convince the county where the Bessemer plant, I'm not sure what the name of the county is, but the county where the Bessemer plant existed, they were able to get those county officials to change the timing of traffic lights outside the facility to implement maximum green times, which essentially meant that it hindered organizers' ability to talk to workers as they were coming and going from the facility, because they're not allowed to do any of the work inside, on actual company grounds. Yeah. So they were stationed outside the entrance to the facility trying to just talk to workers as they were coming from their shifts and leaving. But if the greens were just constantly rolling people in and out of there, then there was no time for people to be stuck at traffic lights and talking, you know,
yeah.
talking to these facilities, these organizers, or reading any of the signs that were out there. And, you know, going hand in hand with that was that they were also, so not only were they able to talk to the county and get them to change the traffic lights, but they also hired local off-duty police officers from the city there to basically do private security at the facility, which, you know, seems pretty egregious. But they were able to have the cops wear their official uniforms and drive their officially marked police cars as they were just patrolling the facilities 24/7, driving up and down the streets out front and being stationed right outside the entrance to the Amazon facility there, which not only organizers and workers reported, but also reporters who went down to cover the union drive. They reported being harassed. They reported the organizers and the workers and themselves being harassed by these police officers, who would basically just be driving back and forth constantly, or like coming over and questioning people for loitering or any number of other things, and just basically using the mechanisms of the state that are paid for by the taxpayers to intimidate the taxpayers and the workers in order to benefit the mega corporation that avoids paying its taxes and makes money off of those people, those workers. So, you know, pretty clear what side the mechanisms of the state are on in this battle here. So those are a bunch of things that Amazon did to intimidate the workers. And those were all laid out in the harassment charge, in the objections from the union. But the bulk of the union's objections were centered on Amazon's attempts to interfere with the collection of the actual ballots. Now, because this election took place during the pandemic, it was entirely done by mail, which meant that the ballots were sent to workers' homes and then the workers returned them through the U.S. Postal Service, which is not the normal way of doing things. Normally, union elections are done in person with an NLRB official or multiple NLRB officials overseeing the process. So this is a bit different, and it, you know, it had its advantages and disadvantages for both sides. But one thing that Amazon did was that they requested and received from the USPS, the Postal Service, to have a mailbox placed on their facility as a way of, you know, a means of collecting ballots from workers. Now, the official finding from Kirsten Myers, I may have pronounced her first name wrong, I believe it's Kirsten, who is the hearing officer from the NLRB's Region 10 office, which is overseeing that area where the union vote took place. Kirsten Myers found that Amazon's installation of a private USPS mailbox in front of the facility and immediately beneath the visible surveillance cameras usurped the labor board's exclusive role in administering union elections, which, you know, is a pretty egregious infraction on the part of Amazon. And in fact, at the time that the union vote was in the run-up to the vote, the union, the RWDSU, argued that the presence of a mailbox at the facility was done intentionally and would have the effect of intimidating workers by suggesting that the company itself, Amazon, was involved in the collection and tallying of votes. Now, for their part, Amazon officials claim they were simply trying to ensure that everyone, or that every employee, could cast their ballot. But workers who testified on the union's behalf during the NLRB hearing claimed that they believed management had access to the mailbox and they felt they were being observed to see if they were participating in the election. Which, you know, again, as we discussed earlier, like, there are a number of reasons why the vote failed. But if workers themselves, who may even recognize the benefit of having a union, feel as if their jobs are at risk simply by participating, or feel intimidated away from participating in it, like, that could diminish turnout, or that could skew the votes or the results of the election. And doing something as simple as just implying that their employer was going to see what their vote was and count their vote and see what their name, you know, and see that they voted for the union, that's enough to scare a number of people off from even risking their livelihood on that.
Yeah, and so it's just a lot of plausible deniability.
Exactly.
Right, so, hey, we're just trying to have the election go through as normal. But again, all of these things, when there's a power dynamic between two groups of people, there are subtleties to kind of emotional states and how people react based on actions. So
yeah, and it's, you know, this, again, as Elliot mentioned before, like, this is not a new undertaking on the part of employers trying to dissuade people from joining the union. This is pretty classic intimidation tactics that are employed. In fact, Amazon...
Just modern, right?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
They're just less obvious.
Yeah.
Right? And I think, you know, if you want to talk about the differences between this stuff, it's this is how things are done in a contemporary context. Is it's not, you know... You know, we can get into tons of arguments about different things, about systemic, like systems that are holding people down in less, in more subtle ways or
yeah.
things like that. And this is just another example of, yeah, of course, they're not intimidating them at gunpoint.
Right.
But like there are still ways that you can subtly influence people, like I said, in a power structure that is like this, where one group has a lot more than the other.
Yeah.
And so it's, I think it's still very fair to call these things out, despite them not being extremely obvious.
Yeah, I mean, like they aren't hiring Pinkerton, you know, soldiers to come and
yeah.
and bust heads with billy clubs and stuff and shoot people and mm-hmm. they're not threatening physical violence, although the presence of the police is definitely a threat to the working
yeah.
class population there. But it's because they don't need to. Like, those tactics can be left largely in the past because of all of the new mechanism, you know, social media and all the new ways in which the company is able to intimidate workers psychologically or, you know, mm-hmm. through their environment that doesn't require the immediate threat of violence. But they, you know, as Elliot said, like, these are still, like, it's a one-to-one thing of intimidation, whether it be through someone standing in front of you with a club or intimidation through someone being
yeah,
already
hey,
working
we're
going to
see you vote on this
exactly.
camera, and
yeah.
we're keeping a list of everyone who voted.
Yeah.
And you're going to pay for that without us having to say it specifically. Right?
Yeah.
These are all things that are implied by, you know, the status of it and or the state of things. And also, I mean, like I said, are coded in plausible deniability because, you know, hey, the camera's just making sure that no one's tampering with the election, these types of things, right? So
exactly.
It's these kind of reasonably sounding statements that are then being used for kind of other purposes.
Yeah. Like, you know, Amazon's quote of, you know, explaining why they had they pushed to have a specific mailbox placed on their facility as just trying to ensure that every employee could easily cast their ballot when, like, everything else in what they're doing, all the other actions that they're undertaking around this vote was clearly designed to make sure that employees didn't cast their ballot or that they were scared of casting their ballot. And yet, as Elliot just said, like, the reasonable deniability of them just being like, well, no, we're just trying to ensure it. You know, we're having a camera to make sure no one tampers with it.
Yeah.
And we're placing it here so that we can oversee it and make sure no one messes with it.
Yeah.
Like, it, you know, yeah, it's plausible deniability, but it's also very, like...
common,
it,
yeah. I mean, you don't
yeah.
hire these... You know, you don't hire these contract agencies because they're not good at what they do.
Exactly.
Right? Like, these big companies, they all hire the same types of agencies because they get results. Because
they know who... I mean, in fact, Amazon, for this specific drive, hired a union-busting firm that has basically been employed and recommended by the Koch brothers, by the, you know, through the Koch brother network, which is, you know, a whole other show that we go into. But basically, like, yeah, as you said, there are specific firms, law firms and consultancies that make their entire living off of telling consulting to companies and telling them how to destroy unions and how to you know, intimidate workers and keep union votes going down, and that's what they did. And so, just quickly, if you are just joining us, this is Labor Radio. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilland.
And we are discussing the results of the union vote in Alabama that took place, you know, a few months ago, and more specifically, the very recent development that the National Labor Relations Board has come down with a ruling. It's an initial ruling that will need to be finalized, but they have determined that Amazon used intimidation tactics that were, you know, undue intimidation tactics that should make the results of that election, which did not go in favor of the union, but that their decision now is because Amazon intimidated the workers, that those union results should be, or those election results should be thrown out and a new election should be held. And so, yeah, we're discussing right now specifically what it is that Amazon did and how Amazon specifically requested a United States Postal Service mailbox to be placed on their private facility under watch of their cameras and in view of the police that they had hired, off-duty officers they'd hired specifically to patrol their facility to intimidate workers away from voting or to make workers think that they, in fact, may be the ones counting the votes and seeing who voted in which way. And so, you know, with all of that, Kirsten Myers, the NLRB official who came out with this ruling, says that, you know, although there is no credible evidence that anyone aside from USPS workers, the Postal Service workers, accessed the outgoing mail from that private mailbox. Myers concluded that, however, even absent of evidence that the employer had access to the mailbox, there was sufficient evidence that employees reasonably believed their activities were being tracked. And therefore, even though there may not have been any foul play involved, the simple fact that it was made to appear to workers as if they were going to be seen by their, it was going to be tallied by their employers and their supervisors would know, that was enough to skew the results of the election so much that the results should be thrown out. Now, there are other things that that the NLRB also noted as being against their regulations and in violation of the labor rights of these workers, specifically that they argued that Amazon violated the National Labor Relations Act rules by polling employees about support for the union by simply distributing vote no pins and car tags in front of supervisors and managers. So again, another situation where they may not have, you know, they have plausible deniability because all they were doing was just panning out anti-union, you know, literature and like little tchotchkes. But by doing so in front of workers, but the supervisors and managers of these workers, it is implied that that is endorsed by their managers and that the managers and supervisors are in fact watching them and will know who votes
which way.
Yeah,
see who's not wearing them.
Exactly, exactly. And so it is, you know, the whole thing is just basically one large and multi-tiered example of a company using its unbelievable power and resources and reach into the workers' lives to scare them away from doing something that is ultimately in their best interest.
Yeah.
To, you know, even the playing field a bit.
Yeah, and obviously, right, like this this decision will have to kind of get approved,
yes,
kind of above to the next round, like of the NLRB.
Yeah.
But I do think an important thing to call out here is that at this point, the kind of cat is out of the bag.
Yeah.
And even if they rerun the election, and don't utilize some of the tactics that have been called out, there's already a vibe and a basically a intimidation factor that is involved from
right.
the previous one, and so I'm not really sure you can kind of put that back in the bottle.
Exactly. And like, yeah, I mean, as you're saying, there's a good chance that, you know, if this is in fact enforced and the results of the election are thrown out and a new election is held, there's a good chance that it will likely go a similar way. But the idea is that this is just the first. Like, the idea is that there just needs to be a foothold. You need to keep chipping away at this mega corporation and do it wherever you can and do it as publicly as possible in order to try and break through at some point in their front in order to, you know, give the workers of this mega corporation a little bit of power within their system or a little bit of a, you know, a step up. And so whether or not this vote, you know, gets overturned and a new election happens and, you know, whether or not the results go in favor of the union, it is still showing that, like, it is not that there is someone standing on the side of workers. The NLRB is supporting the workers, and it shows that it is possible to continue pushing against these things and that it's not inevitable that the company is always going to win. And so it should in some way provide hope for working people everywhere and, you know, specifically at different Amazon facilities who are toiling and under these terrible conditions, that there may be a chance
for
change.
And Amazon really is a unique situation, not
yes.
only in its size and scope, but also in the types of people that work for it and the large seasonal
exactly.
like, workforce that it
yes.
has. So, you know, we haven't really touched on the fact that, you know, it's probably harder to, I think it's fair to, you know, assume that it's harder to intimidate someone who's a FTE, like a full-time employee,
yes.
versus a contract worker who's really just trying to get through their allotted time.
Yeah.
Right. And so when there are rulings where, you know, in the case of Amazon, where, you know, they have to include everyone at their facility in order to pass this thing, which again was a tactic to try to make it harder to unionize,
mm-hmm.
that is really different than a lot of other situations that we've talked about on this show previously.
Absolutely.
In that these folks have less of a, I guess, a dog in the race, right? They're just contract workers. Or,
yeah. They're just there to get their bag and get out as quick mm-hmm. as possible. And, you know, exactly like you said, in fact, when the union initially filed a petition with the labor board to form a union there, like, so when this all started, they filed their petition to represent a unit of 1,500 workers who were mostly full-time pickers and packers at that facility. But Amazon's lawyers push back and use a classic anti-union tactic, and they countered that that the only lawful unit that the union could petition to represent had to include all workers at the facility, which included, you know, seasonal employees, which added approximately 5,800 more workers to the tally there, which was four times the number the union initially petitioned to represent. And that had a lot to do with the fact that the facility undertaken a massive hiring frenzy as related to, you know, the COVID pandemic and the increase in people shipping things through Amazon. And so what that effectively did was dilute the support, the initial support received from the 1,500 workers who signed the cards right away. And so, you know, in fact, that's actually something that is mentioned in the conclusion from the NLRB official. Myers wrote that regardless of whether the employer succeeded in defeating the union in a landslide, the employer's conduct herein so undermined the laboratory conditions necessary to ensure a free and fair election that a rerun election is necessary. Over 2,000 employees did not vote in the election, a sufficient number to affect the results of the election. While it is unknown why these employees refrained from voting, there is, at the very least, the possibility that the employer's misconduct influenced some of these 2,000 eligible voters. And so, you know, it is not, as Myers mentions, it's not knowable exactly what happened, but it is reasonable to assume that of those 2,000 voters who did not participate, a lot of them probably were, as Elliot mentioned, you know, very precarious or very, you know, transitory workers that were there just for seasonal work, just hired as part-time workers during the, you know, as a result of the pandemic or as a result of the holiday season, in order to simply get the money where they could and get out, yeah, and not rock the boat.
They don't want to get noticed. They don't want to be on the camera, exactly, or assume that they want to be on the camera. And so these things affect people, I think, subconsciously.
Yeah. And they're not there as long-term employees. They're there as quick short-term employees. Mm-hmm. And so for them to be included in a vote that would affect largely the future of people working there, it makes very little sense. And so at the very least, you know, that the effect of the union lawyer, the Amazon lawyers, increasing the number of workers that had to be participating in this, that had to participate in the vote, that clearly diluted the support and likely, along with the intimidation tactics, led to the results that we saw, like the landslide victory for Amazon themselves. And so just to conclude this section here, the next steps for this are that both Amazon and the union will now have time to officially respond to the hearing officer's recommendations, the recommendation being that the results be overturned and a new election be held. And after that happens, the Atlanta NLRB office's regional director will issue a final decision on whether a new election should be held. And that process will likely take several weeks, if not, you know, months. And so we're at a point now where it is, you know, it's very much like hurry up and wait. All of this came out, and there's going to be a lot of statements coming out from both sides and a lot of, you know, a lot of excitement and frustration, but ultimately nothing will happen until the regional director of the NLRB office makes their final decision. So we could be at a point where, you know, this is just gone and no one will ever talk about it again, or this could lead to another step, another process, or another step towards unionizing workers. And at the very least, this should be seen as a win for working people everywhere and for Amazon workers specifically, because it is possible to, with the support of the state, take on this mega corporation and try and claw back some rights and even the playing field a bit.
Yeah. So stay tuned.
Exactly. Yeah, we will certainly keep you updated on the story. Unfortunately, we are running out of time here. So we will be back on next month in September, the third Monday of September. And we will obviously keep you updated on this as well as any other major labor stories that take place. But until then, thank you so much for tuning in. You can interact with us on the website. Go to kboo.org/laborradio. You can find information on how to contact us if you want to discuss this more. And yeah, please tune in next month. Thank you so much for listening to Labor Radio. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Ellie Gilland.
Have a great
Prison
night.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime, and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Welcome to Prison Pipeline, produced at the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. Patty Katz was an early visionary in Oregon public safety reform and a lifelong advocate of addiction recovery. She co-founded Hands Across the Bridge, an annual event in solidarity and support of addiction recovery. She helped pass the Ban the Box law, which removed the employment question about whether an applicant ever committed a felony. Patty hosted Prison Pipeline in 2012. We'll hear tributes to Patty Katz from her many friends and family who gathered at her celebration of life that was held on August 8th at Living Hope Church in Vancouver, Washington.
So my name's Abby Stokes. I'm also a person in long-term recovery. And what that means to me is that I haven't had a drink or a drug in over 15 years. The first time that I attended Hands Across the Bridge, my very first impression was that it was just a giant, awesome party, and all my Oxford people were there, and there was just a ton of recovery family that